Radio Free Readout begins in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Redoubt. This is episode 1706 at the Voice of the resistance against everything that sets itself against Americanism, against our heritage, and against our conservative values. This is the John Jacob Schmidt Show. I'm John Jacob Schmidt, your host. Thank you guys for tuning in, and thank you guys for your patience. Also, I made a mistake yesterday. On the Saturday show on KTW, I said, join us tomorrow night, live, 8 p.m. But I wasn't thinking. I only watch about one football game a year. I grew up on football. I played football, used to be a football fanatic. But I just have lost it for professional sports. But I do really enjoy watching one game a year, and that's the Super Bowl. So between working on my show notes and watching the game, I was pulled away from my show notes because that was the most amazing football game I've seen in a long, long time. And by far the best Super Bowl. Amazing to watch. It was just what a comeback. Wow. So that was really exciting, and that's why we didn't have a show at 8 p.m. We put a posting up there, hey, we're going to record this later tonight, get this up for you. So you guys, on your morning commute, you get your daily dose of your weekly dose, your Monday morning commute dose of Radio Free Redoubt. It'll be sitting there waiting for you. But, yeah, I'm not a big sports guy anymore. I mean, I love sports, athletics, and it builds very strong character development, and there's just so much to be said for it. But on the professional level, I don't know, even college level, it's just so much different now. I don't know. I've just lost it. So, but you know, I haven't been to a hockey game in 5 years. We went and saw the Spokane Chiefs play Friday night. That was a great time. So two sports events, one live, one on TV. I got it out of my system there for a while. Okay, so anyway, that's the explanation for the 8 p.m. show. For those of you who didn't catch that, you didn't realize that, you didn't see the posting, and you tried tuning in and we weren't there. That's why. We've got a lot of stuff that we're going to cover. I'm going to pick up where I left off from the Saturday show about the Islamic thing. I want you guys to go back and listen to that. It's only 30 minutes. It goes by quick. And then that's setting up for segment two that I'm going to talk about tonight. And then the segment three and four, I am going to do an analysis and commentary review on the new CBS series, Hunted. I've gotten bombarded with emails and texts and people contacting me saying, have you seen this? You've got to see this. This is great. Well, I'll explain more about that for those of you who have not maybe even heard of it. And it ties into the Underground Project series that we've done and several topics that I've covered in the past. So I am going to review that. And I'm looking very much forward to that. And I know many of you are too. And that's probably why some of you are listening in. But segment two is going to be really important, especially from a Christian perspective on refugees. Because there's some scriptures. And we want to make sure that we're doing the right thing. And we have things in their proper context. That we are approaching this immigration crisis or refugee crisis versus a Muslim invasion. It's really important that we are as gentle as doves, but we have to be as wise as serpents in this day and age. In this day and age of confusion, misinformation, disinformation, propaganda, twisted truth, and lies woven through truth, where it's very difficult to discern. We have to have discernment today more than ever. So I'll get into all of that. I'm going to do a very short news and commentary section, and we'll get into that right now. The news and commentary is brought to you by Glenn Tate, the author, and the 299 Days book series with all 10 books out, including the audio. Go to 299days.com to learn more. And I also said that I was reading Lavoie Finicum's book, the novel, and I was going to do a review, but I didn't get any further over this week than I had gotten last week. So I want to get further into the book before I review it, but I love as far – no, actually, I did actually read an additional chapter, but I want to get further along. It's about an EMP situation, economic collapse, the whole – it's a SHTF scenario, and it follows these characters through – making it through this and then coming out the other side. So I am going to hopefully do that next week. So the news and commentary, first story up, national news. You guys are already aware of this. The Seattle judge puts a block, blocks Trump. So this federal judge interferes with the executive branch's constitutional authority and constitutional obligation to protect and defend our borders. And is it any wonder that this guy's a Black Lives Matter pro bono immigration background? Those this block up in front of Trump's immigration policy to protect our borders and keep us safe from unvetted Muslim refugees, among which ISIS has boasted they will be exploiting to bring ISIS fighters into the U.S. just like they've done in Europe. And they're pushing for the sanctuary cities. I saw a great sanctuary, a great meme. And there's Rahm Emanuel, the mayor of Chicago, quoting him, "Chicago will always be a sanctuary city. You are safe in Chicago." I mean, it's like the murder capital of the world now, I think, or the United States. We've got, what, 41 shot, 11 killed over just Christmas weekend in Chicago. All the immigrants are encouraged to go to Chicago because they'll be safe there, Rahm Emanuel says. Maybe he's secretly trying to put him in harm's way. Maybe there's another side to him that we don't know about. There is a very interesting story that came out, the CBS local in San Francisco. You guys may have seen this on Drudge. Bay Area conservatives keep meetups secret, fearing for their safety. Now, this is a headline in the United States. We talk about in the future, things are going to continuously deteriorate, and one day, conservative Christian patriots may find themselves underground, operating underground secretly. And it is no mistake that we refer to many parts of California as the occupied territory. And this is a great case in point. Some East Bay conservatives say that they live a secret life. They can never tell anyone what they really feel or they fear for their safety. And of course, they refer to Berkeley. If you witness what happened there, they're so violent on top of it. Being a conservative in the Bay Area is like being a heretic, one person said. They said, you lead a double life. You can never tell your friends and coworkers. So these guys are meeting secretly. Organizers asked not to disclose their location or the faces of anyone who attended their secret meeting so they could talk about conservative issues. But they said this is the way it has to be in a liberal state. It's not liberal. It is left-wing, extremist, communist, fascist, revolutionary, hateful and vitriolic and violent if they find out who you are. They will destroy your car. They will destroy your house, your property. They will harm you in more and more places around the country. So I thought that was very interesting and telling of where we could be heading in more and more places around the country as this schism, the societal, cultural divide, this tearing continues to grow in our country. Light versus dark, good versus evil, hate versus love. So the haters are now looking for people to hurt. And there's people, conservative and Christian people, meeting now in secret in the United States. Regional news. Once again, Redoubt News is doing a great job of covering multiple topics, but there are several updates. I want to invite you to read over on redoubtnews.com. I'll just hit some of the highlights here. Ryan Bundy, this was encouraging for me. He had a release hearing that lasted about 6 hours, and he was allowed to open the hearing in prayer and even read from the U.S. Constitution. And the judge allowed this. This judge reportedly has been really working to be fair and obviously not – well, he's acting objectively and not biased. So this is encouraging. On the Nevada trial, which includes Judge Gloria Navarro dismissed one count of the indictment against all of the defendants for the Nevada Bunkerville trial – just this week, and her decision reduced the 25-year mandatory minimum sentence that the men will face if found guilty on all counts. She dismissed one count of conspiracy to impede and injure a federal officer. So chipping away at the charges that these patriots face, and there's one big victory. A long ways to go, though. The Portland trial for the remaining Malheur protesters is scheduled to begin February 14th, coming up. There have been upheavals in this case as well. Four of the seven defendants have been offered plea deals, which reports have three or four ready to accept. The deal will drop all felony charges, and leave them with a misdemeanor trespassing charge. The disposition is expected is 1 year bench probation. So basically they police themselves and a $1,000 fine each. So if they take the plea deal, it's misdemeanor trespassing. That sounds pretty good. Dropping all felony charges. Although they dropped all charges completely against the original, Malheur 7? So, but hey, trespassing, I'll take it. Even more on the drama front, has the government with egg on their faces over BLM Special Agent Daniel Love, if you've been following this at all. And I'm reading from the article at redoubtnews.com. A report released by the Office of the Inspector General said a special agent in charge of the BLM was found to have committed ethical violations and misconduct during an event in 2015 called Burning Man, held in Black Rock Desert, Nevada. The agent referred to in the report is thought to be Daniel Love. Love was also the special agent in charge of the Bundy Ranch cattle impoundment in 2014. Complaint after complaint was filed against Dan Love before, during, and after the protest, but failed to catch the eye of the Inspector General's office. This time, however, the complaints came from within the BLM, the Bureau of Land Management staff itself. And it looks as though the super agent will finally be held accountable. That's encouraging. That guy has been a serious problem. I've heard so many complaints about that guy acting unethical. So hopefully justice will happen in that department. All right, Fox 519 with the eye on the economy. We'll be right back to address some of these issues. How are we supposed to act as Christians? What's the Bible say about immigrants? Okay, this is Radio Free Readout. Don't go away.
Well, while the sheep are lined up in America rooting for the bread and circuses we know as the Super Bowl, the world has been selling off our debt at a record pace. Hello, everyone. Fox 519 here. This week, we're going to look back at what's been going on with our national debt and the surprising debt liquidations that have been taking place among the world's various governments. So sit back, focus as I bring you the news that matters to your pocketbook as patriots and preppers. This is Eye on the Economy, brought to you by Radio Free Readout. Hello, everyone. Fox 519 here. Over the past year, you have heard me tell you about the Readout's most amazing coffee, Sisters Coffee Roasters. And I have to tell you, I've been drinking the San Marcos Supremo, and it's amazing. I'm not blowing hot air here, fellow Readouters. This is quite possibly the most amazing coffee I've ever drank. It smells amazing. It tastes even better. You've got to go out and order a couple of bags right away. It will change your coffee drinking forever. So log on right after the show tonight and go to www.sisterscoffeeroasters.us and order your bags of San Marcos Supreme right away. You will know, too, what it is like to experience coffee the way it was meant to be tasted. That's www.sisterscoffeeroasters.us. Remember, that's two great ladies and an amazing coffee roast. www.sisterscoffeeroasters.us. Okay, welcome back, and again, thank you to our sponsor, SistersCoffeeRoasters.us. Folks, if you haven't ordered your coffee yet, get on it. You're really missing out on drinking the Readout's finest coffee and supporting two really awesome gals. Okay, on to the news. Well, if you think just because we showed 220,000 new jobs last month, we are improving economically, well, you're mistaken. But I bet those of you listening to this already know the ultimate outcome of where we're going financially. But while most of the country is focused on the inauguration of Donald Trump and the bright future that may happen, a very real crisis has been brewing behind the scenes. Foreigners and foreign governments, foreign institutions, are dumping U.S. debt faster than we have ever seen before, and the U.S. Treasury yields have been rising to offset that. This is a potentially massive problem because our entire debt-fueled standard of living is dependent on these foreigners lending us gigantic mountains of money at ultimately low interest rates. The average rate of the U.S. government debt has just got back to 5%, which would still be below the long-term average. We are paying out close to $1 trillion a year in the interest on our national debt. Right now, the interest alone accrues at almost $10,000 every 10 seconds. If foreigners keep dumping our debt and if U.S. Treasury yields keep climbing, a major financial implosion of historic proportions, is absolutely guaranteed within the next 4 years. Still think we have that bright future ahead of us? One of the most significant aspects of the Obama legacy is the appalling mountain of debt that he left behind. You know, right now our national debt is just shy of $20 trillion at about $19.97 trillion on our federal budget, has a deficit of $591 billion. Yes, billion with a B. And yet, they still spend. During Obama's 8 years, he added a staggering $9.3 trillion. Yes, trillion with a T. When you break down that number, it comes to more than $100 million every single hour of every single day while Obama was living in the White House, golf trips included. In just two terms, Obama added almost as much national debt of all the other presidents before him combined. Well, what Obama and the members of Congress that cooperated with him have done to future generations is beyond criminal. It's terrible and it's tragic. Unfortunately, hardly anyone is talking about this right now. We're more worried about what Trump is tweeting. But the consequences now are going to start catching up with this rapidly. The only possible way out of our game of borrow, spend, and stick the future generations of the bill could be if the rest of the world participate. They have to continue to buy our debt to fuel the money machine. Unfortunately, a major shift is taking place. And according to the research I've seen, the most recent numbers have shown foreigners have been dumping more than $400 million of U.S. dollars over the debt in the past 12 months. The wholesale liquidation of U.S. Treasuries continued in November, when, according to the released TIC data, foreign central banks sold $936 million in U.S. paper in November 2016, which due to an offset of $892 million in one buying 1 year ago, which means for the 12-month period ended in November, foreign central banks have now sold an all-time high of $405 million in the past 12 months, up from a record $403 million in the long-term treasury management sales of almost 2 months ago. But what has become the increasingly obvious is that foreign central banks, sovereign wealth funds, reserve managers, and virtually every other official financial institution of U.S. paper is liquidating their holdings at a disturbing pace. Something in the light of the recent surge of the yields over the two-year highs appears to be a prudent move now. In December, I brought you news that China had dumped $403 billion in U.S. treasuries, and they were just getting started. Numbers haven't even come out yet. This is why I'm telling you to get into metals. You've got to make your move now and encourage your state representatives to put forward bills to use metals as currency. Why now in Utah, a bill was just put forward that would do that. House Bill 224 was introduced on January 27th, and the legislation would add several provisions to the state law designed to encourage the use of gold and silver as legal tender. The passage of the bill would set the stage for the expansion of gold repositories in the state and would authorize a further study on sound money policies. Specifically, HB 224 would authorize the investment of public funds in specific legal tender held accounts in the state repositories. Yes, state retirement funds would then be held in gold. Under existing code, the specific legal tender means that gold and silver coin would come out as bullion. You could actually carry and use those metals in Utah. Practically speaking, the passage of this would give the state an option to hold funds in gold and silver instead of Federal Reserve notes backed by nothing. This is pure genius and smart planning move for the future. Metals are biblical and sound way to ensure your future is protected. Now is the time of year to be making your strong financial moves before there's nothing to back it with. Well, thanks again for listening this week. And for Eye in the Economy and Radio Free Readout, this is Fox 519 signing off. God bless.
Welcome back to segment two of Radio Free Redoubt. That is my email address, johnjacob@radiofreeredoubt.com. Segment two is brought to you by Selkirk Mountain Real Estate. Go to selkirkmountainrealestate.com to help you get strategically relocated to the northernmost part of the panhandle in Idaho. If that's where you've got your heart set and your sight set, to get moved into the free zones while you still have a chance. Okay, where did we leave off yesterday on the KTW? Oh, yes. We've been told by religious institutions, you cannot turn these people away. You cannot say no to bringing in, people illegally entering the country. You must coddle them. And those who are immigrants coming from Muslim nations, it's your Christian duty to bring them in. Well, let's look at what the scriptures say. And I looked this up. There's actually a lot of scriptures, and I'll read several of them to you. Leviticus 19:33-34 says, when a stranger sojourns with you in your land, in other words, he's passing through, he's a foreigner, he's not a citizen of your country, he's not one of your people, he's from a faraway land, he's now in your land. That's a sojourner, someone who's a temporary resident, somebody who's traveling through, passing through. When a stranger sojourns with you in your land, you shall not do him wrong. You shall treat the stranger who sojourns with you as the native among you, and you shall love him as yourself. For you were strangers in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. Exodus 23:9, you shall not oppress a sojourner. You know the heart of a sojourner, for you were sojourners in the land of Egypt. Leviticus 24:22, you shall have the same rule for the sojourner and the native, for I am the Lord your God. Exodus 23, Already read that one. Where is it? Oh, Deuteronomy 27:19. Cursed be anyone who perverts the justice due to the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow, and all of the people shall say amen. Now, there's several others. We're going to post these. Oh, here's another one. Zechariah 7:10. Do not oppress the widow, the fatherless, the sojourner, or the poor, and let none of you devise evil against one another, against another in your heart. So the Bible basically says we're supposed to take care of immigrants and refugees, right? Well, hold on a minute. We have laws. We have a constitution that governs this nation that was ordained by God, and I believe the Constitution was ordained by God. One of the fundamental responsibilities of our government is to protect our borders. That's according to the law of the land. And there's a lot of scriptures to back that concept up as well. But see, a sojourner, somebody traveling here to come to school, somebody coming here with a green card to work in the United States is a sojourner. Someone who comes here legally is a sojourner. Someone who breaks the law knowingly, defies our rule of law, is a criminal. That is not a sojourner. That's not somebody passing through. If you look at this scripture, it says, do not oppress the widow, the fatherless, the sojourner, or the poor, and let none of you devise evil against another in your heart. What is this list of widows, fatherless, sojourners, the poor? What this scripture is saying is do not oppress those who are the most vulnerable among you. Is a foreigner working or living or traveling in our country, are they vulnerable? Yes. They are unfamiliar with the culture, with the language. They don't know their way around. They may not even speak English that well, but they're here legally. They are a sojourner. You do not mistreat them. And if anything, we are mistreating sojourners in this way, because there's, what's the other scripture? Do not have two different sets of rules. You shall have the same rule for the sojourner and for the native, for I am the Lord your God. Now that's interesting. Why it would say, for I am the Lord your God. Back in Leviticus, it says, when a stranger sojourns in your land, you should not do him wrong. You shall treat the stranger who sojourns with you as the native among you. You shall love him as yourself, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. In two or three different scriptures, he ends it with that. What he's saying is, you better be just in the way you act. And what's interesting is these corporations and food processing plants and manufacturing and also many of these agricultural businesses are making millions of dollars off of cheap labor. They are exploiting the sojourner. There are two separate sets of rules. If you are here legally, if you're a citizen, I'll pay you this amount. If you have a green card, I'll pay you less. And if you're an illegal alien, if you're a criminal here, then I'm going to pay you squat and you won't be able to complain about it. That is a completely different set of rules for the sojourner and for the citizen living here. And most of those corporations and businesses are major donors to Democrats, those who are pushing for open borders, let them all come in, unvetted, to dissolve our borders, so that we can bring people into our country and exploit them and have two different sets of rules. And the Lord warned against this. He even said, for I am the Lord your God. That means warning. Don't do this, for I am the Lord your God, because what you're doing is unjust. You're mistreating and exploiting those people. And then out of the other side of your mouth, claiming that you are trying to help them, but you're not. Furthermore, let's talk about the refugee situation. Now, that's just dealing with immigrants, people flooding into our country, just trying to better their lives. But those people that are just trying to better their lives, being encouraged to come here to be sojourners, you're encouraging them to A, break the law, and B, you're undermining our economy, and C, you've got two sets of standards, and you're treating what you might call, the scripture might call, oppressing the sojourner. So let's talk about the refugee situation. ISIS has already claimed they're going to exploit the system to infiltrate, just like they have in Europe, to bring ISIS fighters and Al-Qaeda and other fighters into the United States. There's evidence now of training camps where cartels are working with jihadists south of the border. It's a national security issue for us to seal our borders. If I were president, I would have had our military mobilized and activated and on the border within 72 hours of taking the oath. And cartels would be next on the list. But when we look at these refugees coming here, oh, they're fleeing. They're fleeing war-torn countries. We can't say no to them. But we've got the Department of Homeland Security and ICE and the FBI all saying there is no way to adequately vet these immigrants coming in. In fact, there is a article here. I mean, there was a book written here that I talked about yesterday, started to get into that, by Peter Hammond, called Slavery, Terrorism, and Islam. It outlines the deliberate, intentional, cultural jihad and al-Hijra, the Islamization of the West. And I read a little bit of that yesterday, and I played some of the audio from a video that we have linked that I want you to go and watch. But it is very clear what their intentions are. There is an explanatory memorandum that was put in this book that I just mentioned. The process of settlement is a civilization jihadist process, with all the word means. The Ikhwan must understand that their work in America is a kind of grand jihad in eliminating and destroying the civilization from within and sabotaging its miserable house by their hand and the hands of the believers, so it is eliminated and God's religion is made victorious over all other religions. This was from documentation found in a raid on a key member of the Muslim Brotherhood. This is also another interesting story from the Daily Caller. Three brothers, Ibid, Imran, and Jamal Awan, were managing the office IT systems for Democrat members of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence and the Committee on Foreign Affairs. They had histories of financial stress, even though each was paid on the order of $160,000 per year, and were recently fired on suspicion of illegally accessing congressional members' IT systems. Members that are on the Select Committee on Intelligence and the Committee on Foreign Affairs. And we are bringing enemies inside of our own house. In this documentation in this book, which is really important for you to be aware of, I've got more. Actually, I've got a bunch more notes that I didn't pull over into this that I wanted to read. There's an article that came out just this last week that I saw in the Coeur d'Alene Press from Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, in the heart of the American Redoubt. But this is a leftist, an increasingly leftist propaganda, what we call the Coeur d'Alene Pravda. The title of the article is "Trump's Order Hits Area Organization Hard." What? President Donald Trump's executive order to temporarily, and in some cases indefinitely, restrict immigration into the U.S. is striking fear in refugees just across the Idaho state line, leaving them unsure of the fate of their loved ones back home. People have petitioned to get their family members here, and some family members were supposed to come this week. This Jana Nikolov, development director of World Relief Spokane, a resettlement agency that helps refugees land on their feet when they get to the U.S., now they won't be coming. World Relief Spokane is a prostitute in my mind. The money that they make per head for settling refugees is a massive incentive to try to bring as many Muslim refugees into our communities as possible, as quickly as possible. They are paid handsomely for this outreach, World Relief. But everywhere where these large immigration populations, Muslim populations, have been dumped on these communities, there is no relief for the communities that have to deal with the fallout and the consequences of having their own schools, their communities completely flipped upside down. Last Friday, President Trump signed an executive order suspending all refugee admissions to the U.S. for 120 days and barring all civil Syrian refugees indefinitely. The order also banned citizens from Iraq, Iran, Libya, Syria, Yemen, and Sudan and Somalia, all majority Muslim countries, from entering the U.S. on any visa category for at least the next 90 days. Saturday, the ban included U.S. residents from those seven countries who were traveling overseas. Okay, they've corrected that since. What they're saying, though, is that now refugees are fearful and they want to have their families brought over, and now they can't. So this is an emotional issue now. Nowhere in the Constitution does it say we must bring in refugees. Nowhere in the Constitution does it say the president is required to bring in Muslim refugees into our country. The Constitution does say that Congress has a duty to maintain our immigrant laws, and the executive branch executes those laws. And he also uses his discretion on how those laws are carried out. And that's precisely what he's doing. So they're ignoring what the constitutional duty of our government, and they are sniveling about the government not doing things that they're not required to by the Constitution. I stand with President Trump on this, and I'm going to pull some of this other documentation on this explanatory memorandum talking about Muslim Brotherhood's intent on overthrowing our government and our Constitution and displacing it with Sharia law. I've got it in my note. I've got it in the other notes. I'm going to pull those up and I'm going to go over some of those and make those available to you so you can be educated on this. It's just super important. All right. Segment three coming up, and I'm going to give my analysis and review of Hunted, the new CBS reality show where professionals from the law enforcement and fugitive and intelligence community are tracking down 18 citizens. And they do some things well. They botch some things. And we're going to talk about that. Lessons to be learned. Don't go away. This is Radio Free Redoubt.
Why do we sit down when all should be standing? And why do we back down at the critical moment, like running away from the waves of the ocean?
Hi, I'm Chris Walsh, broker and owner of Revolutionary Realty, based in the heart of America's great redoubt, North Idaho. Every day, I sell homes and land to bankers, doctors, economists, scientists, military folks, and more for good reason. They all know what's coming and want to secure safety and peace for their family. They've done the research and discovered that North Idaho's superior environment, food, and security surrounded by more like-minded patriots than anywhere in America. At www.revrealty.us, you can read stories about North Idaho's weather, spring development, growing food, solar, and alternative energy. Additionally, every article has a beautiful quote from the brilliant mind of Thomas Jefferson. We also give you free access to our listings, so feel free to browse our inventory or fill out our short form, and we'll do the searching for you. Call a revolutionary today at 208-667-1776 or visit us online at revrealty.us. That's www.revrealty.us, and God bless you.
Hi, everyone. This is John Jacob Schmidt here to tell you about the 299 Days book series by lawyer and author Glenn Tate. Follow him through his real life story of transitioning from middle-aged, unprepared suburbanite to full-blown prepper, tactical team member, and provider and protector of his family. Go to 299days.com to learn more. Segment 3 is sponsored by StrategicLandscapeDesign.com, designed to keep you safe and to help you thrive. Their services include water rights, permitting assistance, property assessment, master planning, greenhouse design, edible forest garden design, water storage, access planning, alternative energy planning, and tactical landscaping. You heard that right. Get the most use out of your property and the laying of that out. Get a hold of strategiclandscapedesign.com today. Now, let's talk about this Hunted. Very exciting. So what is Hunted? It is a CBS reality show. They have what they claim are 32 top investigators in the world. This is a team made up of all kinds of backgrounds. Navy SEALs, CIA analysts, U.S. Marshals, fugitive recovery agents, former White House intelligence director, U.S. Special Forces, Atlanta SWAT, several different law enforcement, retired law enforcement backgrounds, a behavioral scientist, former British intelligence analyst, naval intelligence officer. What they do is they have – what they've done is they've taken 18 fugitives, nine two-man teams or two-person teams, and they've got to be on the run and be fugitives for 28 days. They've got a 48-hour window that they can be notified. They go on about their business, and there's sometime they know within this 48-hour period they could be approached, tapped on the shoulder, and told, you are now on the run. You've got 1 hour head start before the hunter teams are alerted and start coming after you. So they're asking, the question is, if you had to disappear, could you?
They only have $500 in a bank account.
You have a phone that we can borrow?
They can ask anyone for help.
Can you come get us at the shop?
And they can go anywhere within the 100,000 square mile hunt zone, which includes four states in the southeast, Georgia, South Carolina, Florida, and Alabama. But to win the $250,000, they must find a way to stay hidden for 28 days.
Time is of the essence.
From the world's best investigators.
We need to find them, and we need to find them now.
All right, so you get the idea. And this is where I was having people email me. I had heard about it, and I was familiar with the British version of the same thing, a fugitive show. And so I had people saying, you've got to see this, man. This is great stuff. Stuff that you covered in the Underground Project they did here. And, oh, they screwed this up. And these guys actually did what you talked about. They actually, you know, applied this, or they tried to do it. They did it wrong. And then they got caught. They got captured. So it's a fascinating show. And I think that this should be probably it should be a companion study material requirement for the Underground Project. But although there's – well, let me just go through this. They've got some rules here, if you already heard. They got $500 in a bank account. They can withdraw only $100 at a time. They can ask anyone for help. They got to stay within that 100,000 square mile hunt zone, if you will. Grand prize of $250,000. So let's go into this episode one. And each week I'm going to take a segment, maybe two segments, and I'm going to do an analysis on that week's show. So I'm talking about what they're calling season one, episode one. You have heading up the operation, a former senior FBI official who's overseen hundreds of high-level fugitive recovery investigations. He says, we are going to use the state-of-the-art resources, the same resources that they would have available to them in real investigations. Now, I have to tell you, they are not going to reveal everything. They are not going to tip their hand. And I kind of read ahead. I actually went partially into the third episode. My mind was turning here on several things. Personnel recovery, evasion, and underground type of operations. So it gave me – it's actually really good because there was things that I did not cover in the series that these triggered some thoughts and ideas and some other training or TTPs, tactics, techniques, and procedures that I had realized I had not addressed in the Going Underground series. So I will go through these. And a lot of you guys who have gone through the Underground Project series and all of that material and actually implementing some of that stuff, you're going to see some familiarities here. You're going to see where they made mistakes. You're going to see where they did some things good. But you're also going to see, and this is why you need to watch this, it really paints the picture for you in a way that I can't, in as hard as I try, in an audio series, when you see this actually play out and you see the perspective from the people that are hunting you when you are in the underground. And that's where my mind's oriented toward this. Okay. We don't want to help necessarily the criminal element, but we also understand that there are Christian people working in the underground church around the world. They're patriots. There were patriots during World War II that were deemed the enemy. They were deemed criminal and they were hunted. And their survival or our victory over evil and our triumphs have a lot to do with the skills of those in the underground and those that were evading the oppressive regime. So there are people around the world right now facing oppressive regimes that need to learn how to implement this kind of stuff. Okay, so let's talk about the three couples that were introduced in the first segment, first season, the first segment. It was David and Emily. Now, David is a former gang member, white guy, red beard, red hair, looks about as Irish as you can get, right? But he was involved in the gangs in, I think, Miami. And he's now a defense attorney. So he and his girlfriend, fiance, whatever she is, they are the two-person team that go on the run. He gets tapped on the shoulder at his office, says, "You are now on the run. You've got 1 hour." So they pack up their bags, and he seemed pretty squared away. He's got a good head on his shoulders. And then it scales back to the command center, and this is what they're looking for, and this is what I've told you before. The first thing we're going to do is we're going to look at the circle of trust, those who the fugitives are most likely going to be contacting. Remember when I covered in the series, you need to go 1, 2, 3 in those rings of relational rings. You need to go at least 3 out. Okay. Contact the people that you contact every day. They're going to be all over that. All right. So anyway, I addressed that, but they're right out of their own mouths. They're saying, this is what we are going to do. We are going to be looking at the circle of trust. They want computers, cell phones, social media. They're going to start pushing that stuff out to the ground troops, quote. And that was all headed up by a former White House chief information officer, Teresa, heading up the intelligence effort in this command center. And they said, wherever a fugitive is on the run, the first thing you want to do is look at their social media. And what have I been saying? OSINT. Okay. Who you work with, who your friends are, and they want to know what buttons to push and where your weaknesses are. What's the chinks in your armor? Where are your weak points? Okay. Where's the weak links in your relational chain? So they're going to be doing all kinds of stuff related to this. And they even have a behavioral scientist trying to, get inside your head and find out what this person's next moves might be and what their next methods and modes that they would be using. And that social media, what type of intelligence is that? That's OSINT. See, the intelligence community, whether it's law enforcement or military government entities, they have access to a lot of powerful tools, but the most powerful tool and the one that's used the most, the citizens hand to them on a silver platter voluntarily. It's OSINT, open source intelligence. And in today's world, it's social media. Everything is posted there, and you're going to see how they exploit that. What I've been trying to get through to you, and most of you get it, you get it. We want to also get inside the heads of those that are going to be hunting you, tracking you down. So on the operational side of things, it was headed by a U.S. Marshal Service, retired U.S. Marshal Service, worked fugitive recovery, 100 to 110 fugitives a week. They were tracking, they were pulling in and arresting. So they're directing these hunter teams that, you know, made up of a number of different people, the SWAT commander, police detectives, former special forces, intelligence, army intelligence. But David and Emily's strategy was to contact the people that they can trust. They even said it. Our plan is to contact the people we can trust. What are your thoughts on that right now? Okay. First of all, major breach. This is the downfall of almost all of these people. So their plan was to catch a ride with a close friend. Another mistake. They go to an ATM. Now, if you must go to an ATM, park as far away from the ATM as possible because they even do this. He says, park as far away from the ATM as possible because they're going to know as soon as I hit the ATM. All right, so let's do it close to home. He's thinking, hit the ATM close to home. And then we could be anywhere from there. Then we could start, you know, creating time, distance, and terrain between us and the hunters. So they get the $100 out of the ATM, and immediately the command center gets a ping. We've got a ping, ATM. They got the hunter team on their way there. I'm going to talk about this afterward. Let me just address this now in case I forget. You should have at least $500 worth of cash in small bills, like 20s, 10s, 5s, that you can easily spend so you will not have to come into contact with an ATM. Once you have to go underground, you're done with the ATM and the bank. You walk away from it. You're done with it, you personally. Now, maybe you got a family member or somebody else that can go and access it. You are done using that forever. Then Dave gets on the phone to call a friend on his cell phone. Is there a problem here? Absolutely. The command center gets a hit on this CCTV footage at the ATM. And they also make note that in the Atlanta area where they're hunting him, there are 12,000 video cameras all over the greater Atlanta metro area. They're reading license plates and they are reading people. They can track you moving from one part of the town to the next. So they make it 35 miles to Brad's house. And their whole goal was to fall off the radar, fall off the grid. And they also have access to their homes once they go on the run. So the hunter team goes to the apartment of the girl, Emily. And they're recovering, just like we said, we've talked about in the Underground series, they're going after everything. Now, in this case, they didn't do that. But in a real world situation, your entire DVD Blu-ray collection, gone. Your video games, gaming machines, gone. Your computer, your wife's computer, every electronic device in there, they're taking it. They didn't go that far with this, but they did take her laptop. They took several electronics devices. They opened up emails. They go into their homes and through all the personal belongings, personal property. So when the hunter team gets to Emily's apartment, they go through everything. They find a to-do list. They go through the trash can. They look at the phone. They look at the computer. They found an Apple laptop. They seized all this evidence and a calendar. They found a calendar, one of those desktop paper type calendars, with June ripped out. Well, June is while all this is going on. And when they looked closely, when they piled all the stuff in a box and took it to the command center, they realized that there was an indentation pressed through to the next month. And they could see, they took a number two pencil and just lightly rubbed it over top of the indentation, and they could see the word launch. And that was the word for when they go and become fugitives for this 28 days. It's called the launch, when you launch. She had launch written on the calendar. So they started highlighting, rubbing with a number two pencil, and they discovered her entire 28-day itinerary was imprinted on July on the calendar because it went through. Because she wrote it all down, pressed hard on June, ripped it off, and left the rest of the calendar. And there's everything from addresses, 3 days on California Street. There's another one, no address, but they got Dovecot Trail Road. No address, but the street number. That was the first place they were supposed to hit. These guys were on their trail and on their tail, and they couldn't figure out how in the world, after covering all their tracks, how did those guys end up in their neighborhood patrolling in a blacked-out SUV looking for them? They didn't realize the weak link there was the calendar that she had written the whole itinerary on. She thought she was doing the right thing by tearing the whole month off and taking it with her without realizing that the rest of the month. It's those little mistakes that will get you caught. Attention to detail. So they sent this hunter team into this Atlanta suburb in this Dovecot Trail Road area. And they drove past the house that they were hiding in several times. They saw him go by. So this was at a former college buddy, Brad, at his house with his family, hiding. And, of course, they had written it on the itinerary, on the calendar. But they didn't have his address. They only had his street. So they're looking for any type of sign of these guys being in the area. So what happens is Brad goes out and he alerts Dave and calls him on his cell phone and says, hey, man, there's a black SUV up here. It looks really suspicious. It's parked. We're can like oversee all the traffic coming in and out of this neighborhood. I think it might be bad guys. It might be the people that are looking for you. Oh, we better pack up and get out of here then. The one thing that they didn't take advantage of, and this is what would happen in a real world situation. Once they know you are in a certain area, you can pretty much guarantee if you're a high level fugitive, they're going to roll a Stingray cell phone system into the area. It can be in a van. It can be in the trunk of a vehicle in the back of an SUV. A Stingray will simulate a cell phone tower and trick your phone and all the phones in the area of connecting to it. And then it passes it along to a legitimate cell phone tower. So you make a phone call and they're gobbling up all this traffic that's going through this fake cell phone tower system called a Stingray. And they are harvesting all of this, including the phone calls and the phone numbers and everything else. They did not implement that in this scenario. Remember, they're not going to tell you all the tricks that they have up their sleeve. But when you are on your own cell phone, talking to the buddy whose house you're staying in on his cell phone, who's warning you that there's a black SUV that he thinks could be the bad guys that are looking for you, you've got a problem. That will get you nailed. You can expect a raid within minutes after pulling a stunt like that. Now, they end up discussing this black SUV. They both got stuffed into the back of Brad's car in the trunk, and he got them out of there, and they made it. They made it, and it was smart. The bad guys saw them. The hunters saw the car and said, hey, look at this. Look at this car. Does that look suspicious? And he drove right on by. They let him go. So very, very interesting. And then, of course, that's where it ended for them in segment one. We'll pick it up. There's some things that happened really cool in segment two that I'm going to talk about. But for them, the use of personal cell phones to make contacts with people in their inner circle, which is also corroborated with the locations where they said they were going to be on the itinerary that she wrote out on the calendar. If you're going to write something down on paper, you take the entire notepad with you. Don't just tear out one or two blank pages behind it, because forensics can actually pull that out. Even if 5, 6, 7, 8 pages down, they can pull things out that were written on the top page. You take the entire notebook with you and you burn it, or you keep it on your person. Do not leave that behind. So, good lessons. All right, we're going to come back in segment four. We're going to talk about Michelle and Angela. We've got another couple, too, that got caught right off the bat. I'll talk about them in segment four. Don't go away.
Thanks. Rest of my life. What would you do? You say you want it. What are you waiting?
This is Matt Shea with your daily news commentary, The Way I See It. In the Spokesman Review editorial section, I noticed a disturbing article entitled, Persecuted Church Should Know Better. The author claimed members of the Pilgrim Slavic Baptist Church, many of whom escaped from communist Russia in the 1980s, were persecuting homosexuals by merely holding signs outside of their downtown church building urging rejection of Referendum 71 and same-sex marriage. So let me get this straight. Christians are doing the persecuting by holding signs. The fact is, it's the Christians being persecuted. Many members of Pilgrim Slavic Church suffered firsthand for being Christians under communist rule in Russia. Some were jailed, tortured, had property destroyed, and were accosted just for being a Christian. So they came to the United States, the land of the free, or so they thought. The fact is, since the campaign to reject Referendum 71 started, those same refugees from communist tyranny have had rocks thrown through their windows, property stolen, and their children yelled at in the foulest language imaginable by members of the homosexual community. I spoke with their pastor, and he confirmed those reports. But it hasn't stopped there. The two leaders of the Referendum 71 effort, Larry Stickney and Gary Randall, have both received death threats. The fact is, everywhere same-sex marriage is implemented, the story is identical. Harassment, intimidation, and persecution of Christians follows. This has happened in Sweden, British Columbia, Alberta, New Jersey, New Mexico, and California, just to name a few. The message is clear: support homosexual behavior or suffer the consequences. The fact is, everywhere same-sex marriage has been allowed, it is used to justify the persecution of people of faith, and protecting religious liberty is just another benefit of rejecting R71. At least, that's the way I see it. This is Matt Shea. Thank you for listening.
Segment 4 brought to you by Katie Armor. With your body armor needs, your front, back, and side plates on your hard plate armor. They've also got the soft armor, and they've got free shipping on all their stuff. They're made right here in the American Redoubt. That's C-A-T-I Armor, katiearmor.com. Check them out today. All right. In segment 4, we are going to talk about the other characters that were on the run in this Hunted series. And I'm going to give my analysis on each of these episodes over the next several weeks, probably in one, maybe two segments. We'll see how it goes. But here's the next couple that went on the run. Michelle and Angela, lifelong friends, had known each other since third grade. They were next to get tapped on the shoulder and told, let's go. Well, Angela has a 14-year-old daughter, and Michelle has a young son, and both of them mentioned this was their first time ever being away from their kids. In fact, Angela, when she went to the pickup point to meet Michelle, and Michelle hadn't arrived yet, Angela, practically hyperventilating at the thought of being away from her little 14-year-old girl who she's never been away from. That right there is likely, I'm thinking, that's what's going to take her down. She's not going to be able to stand it, being away from her daughter, not make contact with her, not even for 28 days. Now, in a real-world situation, you're not a fugitive for 28 days. You're a fugitive for life until you get caught. There's no just 28 days and then you get to go on about your business again. So it's a very serious decision. I mean, something very serious must be on the line for you to separate from those that you love. This is only 28 days. And she was already hyperventilating within minutes after her daughter leaving with a friend so she could go underground, waiting for Michelle to show up. That's going to be the chink in her armor. Both of them actually made reference to this. And in segment 2, they exploit that. And I'll talk about that next week. So once she gets the notice, you are now on the run. Go. Okay. It was a mess. They fumbled around. They dropped stuff. They were not prepared. She couldn't find the car keys. They were just unorganized. a lot of fumbling and everything else when they were packing. If you suspect you're going to have to go on the run, you better have all of your stuff together. Matter of fact, you should already have it together anyway. It's called a bug out bag. It's got everything you need, and that's where your cash goes as well. That's where your burner phone goes. That's where your radio, your ham radio goes. Everything you need, weapons, ammunition, clothing, food, water purification, everything goes in that bag for you to grab. If you wake up at 1 o'clock in the morning and your house is on fire, you better have something to grab as you're running out the door, and you'll at least have clothing. You'll have a couple of days of food, right? Okay. And then if you know you're going underground, if you know you're going to be a fugitive and you're going to be on the run, you definitely should have all of this stuff ready to go. Okay. So Angela makes several attempts to contact her teammate Michelle on the cell phone. Another big mistake. The cell phone is going to be your downfall using it. They didn't exploit that. I don't know if they didn't address it. If they did exploit the cell phone's tracking devices later on, but at the early stages, I am almost thinking maybe they looked the other way because they could have nailed them immediately, but they didn't. They also had a military cyber expert begins tracking their phones. This is after they had linked up. And he says, if I can find that phone, I can find Angela. So they start looking for the phone. Now, Michelle's sister, Melanie, is a truck driver. And they got the right idea. She shows up in this 18-wheeler, picks up the two ladies, and takes them to a KOA campground. So they're off-grid. They're away from cameras. Great start. Right? They could have just stayed there for 28 days and nobody would have ever known. But they felt like, well, we got to keep moving. We got to move to so-and-so's house. We got to move here. We got to move there. When you get on the move and you don't have to, that's when you can get exploited. And the command center discovered right away the trucking company, and they started putting two and two together. But by that time, the truck had already done what it was supposed to do and served its purpose and was out of the picture. So they were actually a step ahead of the hunters for that. Good. So after spending the night in the KOA campground, they borrowed someone's cell phone to call for a ride. They called a friend, and there's your circle of influence, your contacts, your rings. You got the inner ring, then the next ring, and then the next ring after that, right? So they called somebody within their ring and made a phone call. Fortunately, the hunter teams didn't track that fast enough to intercept them. But it's a dangerous, dangerous game in a real-world situation. They decided to start just walking down the road until, because why? We got to keep moving. This is what they said. We just made a phone call. Our friend's coming to pick us up. Now let's start walking down the road. Why? Because we have to keep moving. Do you? And ask yourself that. This is what happens, the psychology of this. When somebody's sitting there and nothing's happening, they feel like they have to do something. And that's usually when they will make a mistake. They'll stick their head up when they didn't have to. They could have just guided that friend right to the KOA campground. They could have jumped in the truck and left. But they decided to start walking down the road. Fortunately, in this particular instance, their friend showed up, they jumped in the truck, and they took him away safely. But that made me nervous, watching them deciding, we have to keep moving, let's start just walking down the road, knowing that there are hunters tracking them down, looking for them. The next one is Matt and Christina out of Charleston, South Carolina. It's a husband and wife team, and they got caught right off the bat. And they said, our plan... Because they asked him, well, okay, what's your plan? What do you plan to do? Once you got your tap on the shoulder and told you're now a fugitive, well, we plan to get out of Charleston and head to Atlanta where his parents live. Immediately, first contact in that inner circle of relational contacts. Huge mistake. And both of them said, came from affluent families. They got great relationships with their parents. They talk to their parents on a daily basis, sometimes multiple times per day. Those are targets number one and number two on the hunter's list. They even recognize this. How many times have people said, I'm going to call my parents. I don't, that's probably not a good idea because they can track our cell phones, but, and then they do it anyway. You will see people do bizarre stuff when they know it is a breach of security and they will do it anyway. They shrug because they're addicted to it and they do it anyway. Now, this guy's 6'8". She's 5'11". She's a model and a former Miss South Carolina. I mean, these people stand out in a crowd. So how are they going to go incognito? They delete their Twitter accounts. What? Why? Just stop using it. Don't delete it. That raises red flags, right? Just all of a sudden, just stop using it. Just don't use it. They deleted their Twitter account. The Intel woman says the internet doesn't forget. There are ways you can pull stuff, and they nail some people in the second episode pulling stuff that they thought they deleted, which was actually stored on the cloud, which is another speech that I'm going to give next week talking about storing things and using the cloud. So I'll get to that in a little bit. So Matt says, our first move is to call one of our family members and get a ride to Atlanta. So they're going to be real sneaky and just borrow somebody's phone. Some guy that went up to his house, hey, can we use your phone? He says, sure. So he tries to call mom, no answer. Then dad, no answer. Both of them just go to voicemail. So now they're stuck. That was their big plan, just to borrow a phone, call, and get picked up. So now they start getting paranoid because they have nobody to call and come and pick them up. When you start getting paranoid and nervous, you're going to make mistakes. And they made a huge mistake. They drove and ditched their car in Augusta, Georgia, because of license plate tracking and everything else and cameras. So, okay, good. Get away from your car. That's good. But then they tried to change their appearance by putting on wigs, which looked like horrible. If anything's going to make you somebody look or make you stand out in a crowd, it was these wigs that they had on. And also it helped them get caught. They go to a bus station where there's an ATM. They said, we can't get a hold of mom, can't get a hold of dad. Let's take a bus. Well, we need money. So they turn around to the ATM, withdraw the money, turn right around and buy a bus ticket. Now, you don't have to be a trained fugitive person, escape and evasion, anything like that to know that was just dumb, right? Because now there they are immediately getting pinged at the command center. We got a hit at a bus station. So they send a team to the bus station and walked up and asked the clerk, did you see a really tall guy here with a horrible wig? And he says, yeah. He says, where did they go? Did they buy a ticket? Yeah. Where to? Atlanta. Thank you very much. And of course, there's the picture of him from the CCTV camera getting money out of the ATM, plus the surveillance cameras at the bus station. There they are right on camera with their dorky wigs. They sent a team on ahead to Atlanta to wait for the bus to arrive. And the big plan is when we get there, they're probably going to have seen us on the cameras. So we're going to have to just get off the bus and just run and try to make it up one or two streets up from the bus station. That was their big plan. So things that are not well thought out in advance, mistake. Allowing yourself to become so paranoid and nervous that you start making dumb mistakes using the ATM at the same Greyhound station that you're going to turn around and buy a bus ticket for immediately draws the hunter's attention to that location. And they even discussed it. They even said, because we were probably seen on the cameras, they're probably going to be waiting for us at the bus station. So we're going to have to just get off the bus right away and run. That's not a very good plan. They didn't make it 28 days. They didn't make it one day. Captured. And one of the analysts made a point of that. He said, look, when people come from comfortable backgrounds, when they get away from those comforts, they make mistakes. You're going to have to learn how to live uncomfortably in austere conditions. That was the downfall for several folks. They wanted the psychological impact of them being separated from loved ones and from experiencing discomfort when they were used to comfort and modern amenities. That made people make decisions that led to them getting captured. And we'll talk about more of that as we go. So lessons learned. Build a network in advance with prearranged communications, covert messaging, and a meeting plan so that you can drop messages on the internet. You can use burner phones and use them correctly. Maybe we should do a whole segment on use of burner phones. And a meeting plan. Point is, don't wait till you get in trouble and then start calling all your closest friends that you can trust, because those that you trust are also the first tier targets of a team that's going to be looking for you. So you need to build this into in advance, so there's no connection as far as technological connection after you go dark of having contact with anyone. Cash. Have a minimum $500 in cash in small bills on hand and make that part of your bug out bag. Have your bug out bags ready to go, and it might not even hurt to have a duplicate or, you know, some variation of a bug out bag cached or cached in different locations, maybe at a friend's house or someplace like that, so that you can retrieve and you've got a fresh change of clothes, you've got a toothbrush, you've got maybe $50 worth of cash, you've got a water filter, a multi-tool, things like this. Now, countermeasures to throw them off. I started to see this used, and I was really happy to see some people actually using countermeasures to throw off the pursuers. But I wanted to just add a couple here. I don't want to jump too far ahead because those are in segment 2 and 3. Countermeasures, the calendar. You can actually write notes and lists and make notes on your calendar, but you imprint false information, misleading information, locations, names that you leave intentionally. You can make lists of places like a motel, a taxi service, a campground, some place that you would not ever use, that you would stay completely away from, that is not any type of service or location that you would actually use or visit. Use the ATM at a bus station, and possibly even purchase a ticket and then walk away. Don't get on the bus. That could be another countermeasure to throw them off. All right, you jump in a taxi, you call a taxi on the payphone, and then you draw out your money, buy a bus ticket, you walk a block away and get in the taxi and have them drive you 10 miles away and drop you off. Always try to create time, distance, and terrain between you and your pursuers. The phones. Make phone calls to places such as motels, again, car rental agencies, a taxi company, or some other business or service that you would not actually use, but to use that to give them multiple false leads. Leave your phone. In the Underground series, I mentioned leave your phone behind. You won't be able to use it. You're done with it. You'll never use it again. Walk away from it. But what I mean is, don't necessarily leave it behind, because the intelligence value that is on your phone with your pictures, your phone, your texts, your phone calls, all of your contacts, that is incredibly valuable to an investigation for somebody that's looking for you. So you want to disable the phone, remove the battery so it cannot be remotely activated or tracked, and place the phone without the battery. Unless you have an iPhone, you can't remove the battery. In either case, place it in a Faraday bag. You can buy Faraday bags off of eBay. You can find multiple different locations, sell them now. If anything, wrap the thing up in aluminum foil or something so that it will block the RF, the radio frequency, any emissions from that, and just stow it away in a bag and don't use it again. All right, stash it someplace far and away so it can't be recovered. If you use it, it will bring them right to you. So we'll talk about when your support elements interact with you, meeting, transportation, communicating. Tell them that they're going to come and pick you up. Give them the location and tell them to leave their personal tracking device at home or work or wherever. But if they are in association with you, there's a very high probability that their location is going to be tracked. And if somebody's being observed, they will be observed and led right to you. They'll be leading the trackers right to you, if that makes sense. All right. So anyway, it was really good. I recommend you guys watch this show. Have some of these discussions among yourselves, things that you would do. And I will be adding to this with my analysis and review of Hunted as we go in the future. Anyway, that's a wrap. You guys have a blessed week. I've got nothing further. So I hope you had a great weekend, and we'll definitely be in touch. So this is John Jacob Schmidt, and you've been listening to the voice of the American Redoubt. Good night.